This is December 20th, 2015. It's the winter solstice. Basically, it's tomorrow. Technically, it's tomorrow, just before midnight. But it's the darkest time of the year. And I want to talk about what darkness means in Zen, and what light means, and what doubt means. It doesn't take a lot of imagination to understand Christmas time, which is essentially the winter solstice, Christmas time as with all of its lights and good cheer, the candles, the Christmas lights outside, inside, as a long-standing, ancient, really, way of coping with the darkness at this time of year. Of course, we know that it's different in other parts of the world. In our New Zealand sister center, this is the summer, the longest day of the year. But here we light candles also for Hanukkah, the menorah, the candles. There's a lot of human wisdom behind these big holidays, ceremonies in the darkest time of the year. We have our own Buddha's enlightenment ceremony. Historically, at least in Japan, here too there are variations. But it was December 8th. So when we celebrate the Buddha's enlightenment here, as we did a couple weeks ago, we also bring the candles in. Darkness and doubt. These two words are really loaded from a Zen perspective. Because darkness can be understood as despair. Spiritual darkness can be understood as despair. From a Zen perspective, darkness is seen as marvelously rich in potential. Here, darkness would be understood as the absence of thought, the darkness of no thought, of no mind. We say no mind, always mean pointing to that which is beyond what we think of ordinarily as the mind, the discriminating mind, the discursive mind, and all the mischief that it causes us, the misery, never mind mischief, misery our discriminating mind causes us by in how we divide the world into self and other, us and them. We see so much us and them now in the world. Anyone could be forgiven for feeling afflicted with doubt, if not despair, at the way, the state of the world. It just seems to in a way get worse and worse. Just the big things, the obvious things that are in our faces every day, the climate change, the impending threat of world destruction through climate change, and if not through climate change, then through this fanatical jihadism, radical, violent corruption of Islam. See what ISIS is doing. It's just horrific. We see closer to home our own poverty in the United States, in Rochester, child poverty, worst of any city in the country, child poverty in Rochester, and the refugee crisis. The migrants are fleeing the horrors in the Middle East and being turned away and being exploited. And I'm sure there have been times in history when you could more easily slip into despair about the state of the world and the state of humankind, but this has to be one of the worst. And that can cast a shadow over our mood, our faith. People then with who are susceptible to seasonal affective disorder, that it can be such a problem in December, January, February, when the nights are longest, have that added challenge that can leave them feeling in darkness. Think of Hakuin's words that we just recited: from dark path to dark path we've wandered in darkness. That is, we human beings, through our greed, our ill will toward one another, our confusion, our delusion, our cruelty, if this isn't darkness, what is? And this kind of darkness can indeed prompt in us doubt about our doubt about the way, the Tao, doubt about this universal true nature that we are all part of. How can we be? How can people, as the Buddha said in his under the Bodhi tree when he came to his great enlightenment, how can we all be endowed with this luminous mind, this bright and luminous nature as our birthright, when we look around and we see what people are doing to one another, even on a political level, the vicious partisan politics. So there's so much that could deceive us into losing faith. Some of that is caused by our involvement with news. This is a big distinction between our own contemporary world and practice in the 21st century and the 20th century, between that and practice historically in Asia, that is Zen practice, Buddhist practice, where the practitioners were largely isolated from news of the world. They were in monasteries. There were no newspapers. Maybe some word of mouth eventually would find its way to the monastery, but the monks and nuns were not plagued by all of the dreadful news that can plague us. This freed them from dwelling in thoughts about all of this stuff. It was just their own quarrels with their brother monks and the usual pettiness that happens within human beings in a community, which is bad enough, but to not be exposed to these horrors, child abuse, pedophilia, all of these things that most of us hear about, read about to one extent or another. They didn't have to deal with that then. And so they were, everything was simpler. There was a simplicity to their practice that enabled them to bore into their practice untroubled by the greater the state of the wider world. There was a lot to be said for that. And we have to be aware that the more we do expose ourselves to all of this horrible news, and a lot of the news, definitely the majority of it, is horrible. The more we expose ourselves to that, the more likely we are to be assailed by doubts. The news just battens on the lurid and the horrific. How much do we need to be informed of in the world? I think this is a question worth posing to oneself, because trafficking in news can be a form of avoidance, a way to not turn the mind back into one's own greed, ill will, and delusion. It can be an escape. A distraction. It certainly generates thoughts. And thoughts can so easily lead to doubt in the sense of skepticism. Doubt about the truth of the Dharma. Thoreau wrote a powerful passage I believe that the mind can be permanently profaned by the habit of attending to trivial things, so that all our thoughts become tinged with triviality. We should treat our minds, that is, ourselves, as innocent, ingenuous children whose guardians we are, and be careful what subjects we thrust on their attention. Read not the times, read the eternities. Conventionalities are at length as bad as impurities. Even the facts of science may dust the mind by their dryness, unless they are in a sense effaced each morning, or rather rendered fertile by the dews of fresh and living truth. By that we can understand it as Zazen. Knowledge does not come to us by details, but in flashes of light from heaven. I would just change that. Wisdom does not come to us by details, but in flashes of light from heaven. Yes, every thought that passes through the mind helps to wear and tear it and to deepen the ruts. Please consider this before whiling away hours surfing the web, or uselessly, unnecessarily exposing yourself to popular culture and all this other stuff. We render ourselves vulnerable the more we indulge in those things, of course, some things, it's useful. It has a purpose behind it. But how much? Because the darkness that in Zen we recognize as so having so much potential is something we access when we have let when we are beyond thoughts. This is not knowing. This is what is accessible to all of us through Zazen. And I'm using Zazen widely. It's not just the sitting. Yes, the sitting is absolutely vital, daily sitting. But it can be at any time. We're driving, walking, shoveling snow, if we ever get any snow. It's a state of no thought. We're free of thoughts. We're just fully living experientially, physically, in what we're doing. We're not split. We're not split between what we're doing and what we're thinking. With our body acting in one way or another, one form of work or daily activity, while our mind is somewhere else, daydreaming. So darkness means being fully here, not distracted, not lost in thoughts. And in that state, there is no knowing in the ordinary sense. This is the womb of enlightenment, this not knowing. Marvelously powerful, rich state, this no thought, no mind. A Chinese Zen master from about 1,000 years ago was quoting an earlier master, not by name, but just quoting an ancient who said, not knowing means nothing is not known. Nowhere is not reached. This is pure gold in terms of spiritual practice. And this is not a new thing. This goes back even before Zen. Lao Tzu, the great Taoist, said, when darkness is at its darkest, there is the gateway to all spiritual insights. But it's a tricky thing, this darkness. When darkness becomes despair, it can be dispiriting, flat. One can feel deflated, lost. In this kind of negative, let's call it negative darkness, where you don't want to sit, you lose faith in the Dharma, this is when we're disconnected from our faith mind. I love that phrase. What we now have call affirming faith in mind, the chant that we do. For a while in the 1970s, we the title was Verses on the Faith Mind, hyphenated word, faith mind. And we changed it for good reasons, but there is merit to this phrase, faith mind, because this is our true mind, our true nature, our self nature, self with a capital S. Faith mind is our faith nature. awakening reveals that there is only this faith nature, true nature. There's only that. It makes no sense. It makes no sense when the world is in the state it is, and our minds, let's be frank, our minds are in the state they are. How can there be just this bright and luminous faith nature, original self? It takes awakening to confirm this absolute contradictory idea. That's not an idea, it's the truth. This original faith nature is what gets us up in the morning, even if we have no spiritual affiliation, no religion. There is faith operating in a very fundamental way. Gets us up in the morning, has us carry on through the day. That is a kind of faith, the deepest faith, that there's a point to all this. Or even, you don't even have to think of it as being a point. Still, you're getting up. You're going to work. Or not, but you're still carrying on. For those who can't do that anymore and who commit suicide, there is, of course, a loss of faith in oneself and others. But I always see suicide foremostly as an act of aggression, of an act of rage. It's murder. We don't call it murder, we call it suicide. But it's murder. That's rage. I used to, was much, much younger, used to have a thought when someone, I heard about someone's suicide, just having pity. Oh, the poor person. Well, yes, the poor person. Terrible, terrible state of despair to reach. But let's keep it balanced. There's also rage there. So the despair that leads to suicide, or just misery, is when we imagine that we're seeing things as they are. And we're not. If we're feeling this awful despair, then we're not seeing things as they are. We're seeing things in a deluded way. Kierkegaard, the existentialist, said, "The specific character of despair is precisely this. It is unconscious of being despair." It's unconscious of being despair. It doesn't, when you're in despair, that you're not describing the state. You're seeing things in a faulty way. You think you know that there's no point to anything, that the world is utterly dark and awful. But that's despair, which is always a temporary state. I mean, unless it ends in suicide, and even then, it's temporary if you can accept future lifetimes. This is complicated stuff when you talk about it. On the level of words, this is hard, and I know I may not be coming through too clearly here, but I'm going to keep trying. This dual nature of doubt. Doubt is skepticism. In that we lose our moorings from this original faith nature that we are. It's not that we have it, we are it. Every one of us is this self nature of faith. In skepticism, we lose faith in the practice, ourselves, that really means ourselves. Then there's a disconnect from our nature. Doubt with a capital D means in Zen, it means questioning, wondering, which is a state of darkness, isn't it? When we're truly wondering, questioning, we're in the dark. Think of misplacing your keys. You need to leave the house. Let's say you're in a hurry. I've heard of people who sometimes hurry when they leave the house. And suddenly you can't find your keys. And you're going to be late unless you find them. And you stop. First you look in all the usual places. Okay, I always leave them here. They're not there. But okay, maybe here or there. I'm sure I got to look there. I'm sure I didn't leave them there, but I'll look anyway. And then you look and look and look and look and look. And still you can't find them. And you can actually come to a complete stop in your tracks. You can become immobilized, lost in your wondering what could have happened to them. Or a credit card that you can't find in the usual place in your wallet. And then you sink into the state of questioning. And if it goes on long enough, you could be sifting through thoughts of here or there that I put, and where it could be. But then if you persist at that, you can reach this state of this pure not knowing, no mind. This is absolutely the opposite of the negative doubt of skepticism. This is a kind of samadhi-like state when we've gone beyond the feverish thoughts and we're in this no mind. Right after, in the Hakuin chant, right after he says, from dark path to dark path, we've wandered in darkness. Then a few verses later he says, thus one true samadhi extinguishes evils. It purifies karma, dissolving obstructions, which we can understand as thoughts. Then where are the dark paths to lead us astray? In Zen, we need to develop faith in the darkness and not fear the darkness, but be willing to go into the darkness. This is really a crucial difference between people who can really transform themselves through practice, and those who fall away from it. When we are feeling discouraged, despondent, even in despair, what do we do then? If we can find our way to the mat and just lose ourselves in the breath practice or the koan, but really lose ourselves. And that's going to be a lot easier if we're not trafficking in news and other things, unnecessary things, other trivialities. Then we can convert it completely, reverse it from discouragement into its opposite, inspiration. All of this whole process of becoming discouraged or despondent is something that people who've been to lots of sesshins know firsthand. Many of us find ourselves facing this darkness, and then if we can persist in that darkness, into the darkness, beyond thoughts, then we have the potential of changing our whole perspective on reality and ourselves. The very fact of our despondency or discouragement is a sign of our faith. We wouldn't, if someone had zero faith at all, then there would be no letdown, there'd be no dissonance between the faith and the reality. And there are many stories in the old texts about monks and masters who reach this point of discouragement and pressed on into it. Hakuin, it seems, from what is suggested in his autobiography, Hakuin himself, after he began practice, reached a point of deep discouragement and quit. The great Hakuin quit for a year. He lost faith. But he didn't lose his connection to this underlying, this deeper faith mind, because he came out of it. And then he came back with a vengeance to practice, and threw himself into it, body and soul. He came to real enlightenment experience. And then after that, he then was still not satisfied with his realization, which is also, this dissatisfaction is evidence of faith. You wouldn't be dissatisfied unless you had faith in something more. You wouldn't be discouraged unless you had faith in something more. This is the identity of opposites. The dissatisfaction, skepticism, is faith of its opposite, evidence of its opposite. And so he pressed on, and he had another enlightenment experience, deeper one. And then even after that, still it wasn't enough. Imagine the faith that you would press on after two, or some accounts say more, enlightenment experiences, until he reached the point where he reached the great surcease, as the translators make it, the great rest. When I was in Japan training, I heard from the assistant of Harada Shodo Roshi at Sogenji that he had actually gone through the whole koan curriculum, hundreds of koans as a young man. And at the end, when he was finished, okay, you're done, he was beset with a dissatisfaction, bordering on despair, she said. And he, in her words, he went up into the mountains to die. And there he had a deep realization that brought him back to serve others, to help others, now truly at rest. When Hakuin, as a young man, heard about how the great Ganto had died, this was part of what caused him to doubt the way. His word, doubt, was still in the form of skepticism. Ganto, it's a famous story in Zen where Ganto, as a great master, suffered. He was murdered by some bandits. He came into the monastery, and according to the story, when he was run through with a sword of the bandit, he let out a great cry that could be heard for miles, according to the story, and became very famous. And you can imagine Hakuin hearing this, as many of us might, and thinking, well, what good is Zen practice? I thought the whole point is to see through death, birth and death, life and death. And still, this great master who was so renowned in his time would cry out like that. And this is part of what caused him doubt in the negative sense. But even doubt in the negative sense, if you can keep the questioning alive, keep it as questioning, how could the great Ganto have had his life ended that way? How could it? Even that questioning is evidence of the faith underneath it. Because otherwise you wouldn't question. You say, oh yeah, he was just a loser. The whole idea of realization is just a myth. But no, he questioned. And then he, in his autobiography, he reports that he understood, finally, and laughed. So, if you feel distraught, discouraged, dispirited, even in despair about the state of the world, then increase your sitting and increase it more, and through deep zazen, this will no longer trouble you in the same way. It doesn't mean you lose interest in getting involved in social ills and political issues. You still can do that, but you see it in a new way. You come to see it in a different way. Your perspective changes. Because now the thread, might have been just a thread of connection with your faith mind, now is there are no such two-ness. There is just this faith that in spite of how dreadful things look all over in the world and in one's own mind, let's say, still there is something beyond all this, this world of appearances, the violence and divisiveness. And then, and if you can turn that into just taking refuge in the Zazen, and in this break period that starts now, this our annual holiday break, solstice break, the Zendo's here is just waiting for you. You know how to get in the house during the break, even when the even though the center is closed. Come sit in this dim light. Even if you're alone, you can change everything. Our time is up. We'll stop now and recite the four vows.